Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'll never forget that day in Grand Canyon National Park. The rumors of strange sightings had been circulating among the visitors for weeks, and as the park ranger, I couldn't ignore the whispers any longer. Cryptids, creatures of legend and myth. I was skeptical, to say the least, but duty called, and I had to investigate. One morning, during my routine patrol, a foul odor filled the air. It was putrid and overpowering, drawing me in like a magnet. I followed the stench into the depths of the deep woods, the ancient trees towering above me. The smell grew stronger with every step, and I couldn't shake the feeling that something was watching me. As I emerged into a small clearing, my heart skipped a beat. There, on all fours, was the creature I had only heard about in wild stories. It was unlike anything I'd ever seen. Its fur was black and matted, hinting at the struggles of its untamed existence. Its face resembled that of a wolf, but with a broader and shorter muzzle, making it appear oddly menacing. Those eyes, oh those eyes, they were yellow, but not the vibrant hue of sunflowers. No, they glowed with a dim, eerie amber red that sent shivers down my spine. Its ears resembled those of a Doberman Pinscher, with a distinct cropped effect. And those front legs, they were unnaturally long, like those of a bodybuilder. The paws were more like massive hands adorned with razor-sharp claws. The creature stood up on its hind legs, and I couldn't believe my eyes. The sickening popping sound filled the air, echoing as if amplified through loudspeakers. I felt the ground tremble beneath me as its massive, steroid-pumped body rose to an astounding height. There was no tail that I could see, and it towered over me even from a distance of 10 meters. I was no giant myself, standing at 5 foot 4 inches, and this creature was a colossus in comparison. My curiosity overwhelmed my fear, and I found myself inching closer, cautiously observing the cryptid in awe. Suddenly, it let out a howl that resembled more of a ferocious roar, and my heart pounded in my chest. This was it. I dared to take a few more steps, yearning for a closer look. But my presence had not gone unnoticed. The creature's head snapped in my direction, its yellow eyes locking onto mine. With a swift and graceful movement, it turned and sprinted away, its howls echoing in the distance. I was left standing there, trembling and in awe of what I had witnessed. There was no doubt now all those cryptid sightings reported by visitors were true. The legends were real, and I had come face to face with one of them. As a city kid, I was lucky enough to have my parents relocate to northern Idaho when I was about 14. My parents separated shortly afterward. They didn't have anyone to teach me anything about the woods, but I fell in love with the mountains. I started to hunt when I was about 16. After I would go home after a 26-mile bus ride from school, I had about 3.5 hours to hunt. I had a favorite spot along the lower North Fork River on the Tamarack Ridge. At that time, there were small farms here. One evening, while on one of my short hunts for white-tailed deer, I saw a group of 3 along a ridge. I could hear the deer moving through the brush ahead of me. I got down on my knees. They were ahead looking under the brush halfway up the ridge. Then I started feeling fear welling up in me. As I stood up and looked across the valley to the next ridge, about 150 yards away, I saw what looked like a large man carrying a whole deer up the ridge at a very quick pace. I was amazed at how thick the body, arms, and legs were. The Bigfoot covered the distance to the top in just a few minutes. As it crested the top, I then was very acutely aware of the fear that was in me. I had trouble controlling it. I checked my rifle to make sure it was loaded. I also carried a caliber 357 mag revolver with me. I checked to see if it was loaded. I was feeling very inadequate for the situation I was in. I was suddenly aware that it was almost dark, so I started moving in the direction of my pickup. I almost started to run, but when I would quicken my pace, the fear was almost uncontrollable. I felt like something was watching me, and I could swear I knew from what direction I could hear the brush crack around me, but I don't know if it was related. When I reached the pickup, I was afraid to put my gun down to unlock the truck. I thought if I could just get in the truck, I could settle down and get a hold of my emotions. I was sitting in the truck and still was not settling down. I got the truck started and I pulled down on the old dirt road along the river. The tightness in my chest started to ease as I drove down the road. I passed the bottom of the ridge where I had the encounter. I stopped and looked up the little trail that led to the ridge trail. Immediately, the tightness returned and I felt very vulnerable sitting in the pickup. So I took off faster than I should have been driving on the old road. When I got home, my mom asked what was wrong, and I just let her think I was frustrated because I didn't get anything. I never told anyone about it until my sons were 14 and 16. The young one believed me and had a hard time hunting by himself. When he first started getting into the woods, the older son didn't say much about it. But the topic comes after every hunting season in camp. I've never felt fear like that in my life, whether staring down the barrel of a gun as a police officer or trekking in a cave and underground. Deep within the labyrinthine corridors of a government agency, I, Jordan Davies, a diligent data analyst with an insatiable curiosity, found myself embroiled in a conspiracy that would change my life forever. In a quiet corner of the agency's digital archives, I stumbled upon files marked with a level of classification that sent shivers down my spine. These documents contained irrefutable evidence that an army general had successfully captured a creature with extraordinary and inexplicable abilities. As I delved deeper into the files, my heart raced with a mix of excitement and trepidation. The creature, known only as Subject Omega, possessed powers that defied the laws of nature. It could manipulate matter, bend time, and even alter reality itself. The implications of such a discovery were staggering, and I knew that I had stumbled upon something that the world was not meant to know. My mind raced with questions. How had they captured such a being? What were they planning to do with it? And why was this information hidden from the public eye? My insatiable curiosity turned into a burning desire to uncover the truth and expose the secrets that were being kept in the shadows. As I delved deeper into the labyrinth of classified information, I attracted the attention of not only the government, but also a secretive CIA organization known as Echelon. Echelon's primary objective was to maintain control over information that could disrupt the delicate balance of power in the world. They viewed the revelation of Subject Omega's existence as a threat to that balance and were determined to ensure the secret remained buried. Realizing the danger I was in, I reached out to an old acquaintance, Amelia Morgan, a former intelligence officer who had become disillusioned with the very agency she once served. Amelia was the only person I could trust. With her help, I navigated a treacherous landscape of deception, danger, and deadly pursuits. Together, we raced against time, piecing together clues and unearthing hidden truths about the creature's origins and purpose. Our journey took us to remote locations, hidden research facilities, and even into the crosshairs of government agents and Echelon operatives. Along the way, we formed a bond forged by danger and an unyielding determination to expose the truth. As the pieces of the puzzle fell into place, Amelia and I discovered that Subject Omega was not just a scientific anomaly. It was a sentient being with a consciousness that extended beyond the physical realm. It held the power to reshape reality itself, a power that could either bring about enlightenment or unleash chaos. Our story built to a climactic confrontation as Amelia and I found ourselves cornered in a remote cabin deep within the wilderness. Echelon had finally caught up to us, and a team of highly trained operatives surrounded the cabin, ready to silence us once and for all. In a tense standoff, Echelon's leader entered the cabin, a cold smile playing on his lips. He revealed that their true objective was not just to cover up Subject Omega's existence, but to harness its power for their own purposes. They believed that by controlling the creature, they could reshape the world according to their vision of order. As the standoff escalated, it became clear that Amelia and I were outnumbered and outmatched. Our only chance was a daring escape. In a flurry of desperate action, we fought our way out of the cabin and into the surrounding woods, but it was too late. Echelon's operatives overwhelmed us, and in the chaos, I was subdued. Our story ended with a haunting sense of foreboding. As I was forcibly taken away by Echelon, I exchanged a last glance with Amelia. Our eyes conveyed a mixture of determination and resignation. We had fought to uncover the truth, but in the end, the forces of power and secrecy had prevailed. I was never seen again. The cabin stood empty, a silent testament to a battle fought and lost. The world remained oblivious to the existence of Subject Omega and the unfathomable power it possessed. And in the shadows, Echelon continued to manipulate information and shape the destiny of nations, secure in their control over secrets that could reshape the world itself. When I was a kid, there was a creek in the woods near my grandparents' house that I would hike to and play in. One day, I climbed the berm next to the creek and saw a woman with long black hair wearing a white dress just kneeling over the water and staring into it. I hid behind the berm and just watched for a minute. Right as I was about to turn around and leave, she suddenly stood up and screamed. Not a trying to scare this kid scream, but more like a, I'm currently being burned alive scream. In response, I promptly shit my pants and booked it back to my grandparents' house. According to people on Reddit, I saw La Llorona, a ghost of a woman who lost her kids to drowning or something. I think it's much more likely that it was a crackhead living in the middle of the woods. Somewhere those woods were notorious for being home to a few drug labs and popular body dumping sites. Paranormal or not, still scared the shit out of me, and I never went to that creek alone again. I've had two experiences while solo camping on Crown Land here in Canada. The worst one happened around 2 a.m. I had decided to call it early and just head back to the city, as it had been too windy to have a good fire as my camp was in an open spot in a little valley with a creek, and I was tired anyways. I've walked the route a million times, and it only took about 30 minutes, so I was comfortable walking it in the dark. About halfway back, I'm just taking in the fresh air and listening to the trees creak in the breeze when I get this sudden sense of panic. I stop to look around and can't see anything, so I go to take my water bottle out of my bag, and while I'm bent over, the whole forest goes dead silent. The breeze stopped, the bugs stopped, everything. I noted the F out of there so hard, I almost left my guitar on the side of the trail. Partner and I set off for a weekend camping trip in the Rocky Mountains after work on a Friday. Late start, so we didn't get to the road we were looking to camp off of until late. It was getting dark. We found a cleared area, parked my Jeep, and hastily set up our 2.5-person tent, threw in our sleeping arrangements and dog, and hopped in the tent for the night. We were playing a board game sitting cross-legged around 9 p.m. when something swiped at the back of my head through the tent wall. We panicked a bit, used remote start on the car to scare whatever it was off. I tried to convince myself and my partner that it was a falling stick. There was no wind and we were in a clearing. The next morning we came to discover that we were about 10 feet from a half-eaten deer in a mountain lion's pantry. I got pet on the head by a mountain lion. Mind you, I'm well above average height, and this kitty was taller than me sitting down. A shadow appeared right in front of me on the road yesterday. I was riding on my bike back home at 12:30 a.m. It was that night also a bit foggy, but still clear enough to see what's happening in front of me. I live in Belgium and have to ride through a rural area on a dark, quiet road that leads to a big forest that I also have to go through. It is known in my village that in the forest many, quote, self-harms have happened mostly by hanging. I was coming back from being with friends, and it was about 1:30 in the morning. Before you get out on that road, you drive on a small stretch of street that is inhabited and completely lit by street lamps. While I was driving on the lit part of the road, a black shadow that looked like a person appeared 20 meters in front of me in the middle of the road. There was nothing around the road that could cause a shadow, so there was no logical response to that shadow. The most punishing thing was that the spot where it was standing was completely illuminated. The phantom hovered 50 centimeters or so in the air, and was, I think, 2 feet high, and looked hard like a person. I drove on toward the phantom because I had to go that way because it is the shortest way home. And the shum stayed put and I drove in front of it. Then I looked back and it was gone. My mom told me afterwards that a good friend of my family also hanged himself there 5 years ago. Maybe it was him. I can still see it in front of me when I close my eyes. Tomorrow I'll post a drawing of what it looked like. Out camping. I was off foraging and finding kindling when I got a sense I was being watched. I felt a little off, so I readied my hatchet. I couldn't see what set me off, but I kept it in one hand while I got rest of my kindling. When I got back to camp, I saw my sight all messed up in several big claw marks on the tree I'd hung my food from. The food bag was still hanging there. I figured a bear or mountain lion was digging through my camp. My danger sense was still going, but I didn't have the daylight to get back to my car. I set my fire and kept myself ready for a fight. I prepped some alarm traps with a bit of 550 cord and my tent stakes. I improvised a hammock out of my tent tarp and the shredded remains of my tent. I used every last bit of cordage I had prepping for the night. The makeshift hammock was pretty comfy, and where I positioned it, I got a decent amount of heat from the fire. I think I dozed a few times in the night, but any stick crack or pop woke me up. At some point in the dark, my fire was low, and I heard one of my alarm traps get set off. It sounded like the rope got tangled with an animal because it kept going a bit longer than I expected. My adrenaline kicked in, and I jumped from my hammock in my camp shoes and made a bunch of noise like the Hulk. Hatchet and camp knife in hands, I rushed the edge of my camp on the alarmed side, and I heard the cans from my alarm travel away. Whatever it was, their element of surprise was ruined. I didn't sleep the rest of the night and just kept an eye on my fire in the tree line. At dawn, I did a quick recon and salvaged my traps. The one was missing, as I suspected. I only searched a few yards around, but figured it was a lost cause. I packed up and hiked back to my car. The scariest part was not knowing what was out there. Maybe if I would have seen it, Roman too would have been able to rationalize the situation. But that was the last time I camped alone without a rifle. I live in a small town that was founded in the 1850s as a railroad town, as it's exactly 100 between Columbus and Pittsburgh, and at the time steam engines needed to stop every 100 miles to refill with water. I live on the main street, directly across from the field the tracks run through, just down the street from the old rail depot, now a museum, and my house was built in the 1860s by the Pennsylvania Railroad Company. My dogs have always hated my dining room since I bought the house 6 years ago. They won't lay out there and never linger in there long while moving through the house. I've never thought anything of it. I always assumed it was because of the linoleum floor. Recently, within the past few months, they've started barking at the walls in the dining room in the evening. Again, I just assumed it was because of the shadows. The paint in there is a high gloss, light hue, because it's a large room with a single light source and always feels dark. So at night, the light can cast some pretty epic shadows. Well, the week before last, my Mastiff charged into one of the walls while growling, and I finally paid attention to what he was barking at. I went out to the dining room and watched a shadow very clearly move from one end of the wall to the other while my dog was bashing himself off the wall. I decided to just let whatever it was go on about its business, because it has never bothered me. Fast forward to today. While I haven't seen the moving shadow again, my dining room fan's light fixture blew 10 brand new bulbs last week. Every light I've put in it has stopped working within a few hours. Had an electrician here today that looked it over and used a multimeter on it. Said it's in perfect condition. I don't think I was supposed to see it, and now it's mad at me. Or maybe it's mad at the dog. And I have no idea what it even is. I just know I have a very dark dining room, and my dogs refuse to enter it at all. Being as my front door leads into my living room and the dining room, and then the dining room branches off into the kitchen, the basement, the upstairs steps, and the bathroom, my dogs have been stuck in the living room for a week. And they're not budging, even if I bribe them with treats. I have considered asking it to leave, but as a pagan, I know well enough that some things take any direct communication as an invitation. If my little house ghost isn't just a little house ghost, I'd prefer to not extend an invitation and feed its energy. What is in my house? Didn't actually see anything, and I'm really glad I didn't. A friend and I had started walking a trail system that leads deep through some woods and fields by his house around dusk. During the day, it's really peaceful and green and whatnot, but it was late, and it was getting dark fast. The area we live in has been flooding recently, and the trail is currently 2 feet underwater about halfway through the loop. But my friend said we could walk to that point, and then take a shortcut back to the beginning through one of those man-made pine forests where the trees are all perfectly lined and spaced apart. We only had to go about 50 feet into the pines before the canopy made it pitch black all around us. But he knows the area, so we kept going. About 100 feet further in, we both hear a very distinctive squeaky door noise, like literally no chance of it being anything other than old rusty hinges. He's come through here 20 times in the past few weeks, while jogging during the day, and confirms that he's never seen any type of building or anything with a door back here. We both decided that we'd rather just walk the trail back the way we came in than deal with whatever horror movie shit was happening in there. I've never noped out of a situation faster than I did then. So moved into a brand new house. Land was an old farm, and since we have moved in, we have had odd things happen. First thing I've noticed is some items being moved, like put the remote down on the table and come back to it. And it's moved to the middle on the baby monitor. We see orbs at night that just disappear in front of the camera. I walked past the door and saw something stood in the hallway, so walked back only to see the dog staring into the hallway, as if she's looking at someone.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
My Alexa speaker responding to someone asking it for music. This has happened several times. However, today I was on my own in the lounge, the device was in the kitchen. Baby is asleep, nobody else in the house. The Alexa sparked to life and said playing Something Stupid by Robbie Williams on Amazon Music. Now I freaked out, like, how's this switched on? I've checked with my partner and she's not done it remotely. And if she did, it would have gone straight to play musics and not said now playing. I've checked my Ring camera and nothing has triggered. I've then checked the Alexa voice recorder, and you can hear a very faint, almost distant voice saying the song. I don't recognize the voice. The other thing to note is my phone battery went from 81% moment before this happened to 21% after this happened. What do you guys think? I work in a factory during the graveyard shift from 10 p.m. to 6:30 a.m. in Columbus, Ohio. That night I was actually working my sixth day in a row for overtime. I have had this job for a while now and I am used to this kind of schedule. I am bringing this up because typically after I get home I am still wide awake and tend to sleep later in the day. I was totally alert when this happened. I ended up leaving work early since I completed a lot more orders than usual, and I was on my way home around 4:30 a.m. I turned down the side street that leads to my apartment complex and I immediately noticed it is quite dark as the streetlights are not illuminated. The suburb I live around uses streetlights that have sensors, so they light up when people walk by them and turn off by themselves to save energy. As I noticed it was dark, I decided to turn on my brights in my car. I am only 6 blocks away from home at this point, and I come around a small bend in the road that leads up to a children's park, and the only stop sign on this street between my apartment, which is a few blocks further. I notice something in the middle of the road. My first thought was it was some stacked garbage that maybe blew off of the curb into the street. But as I drove closer, I slowed down as I realized it was a person walking down the street with their back to me. It seemed like an old person, a very old person actually, by the way they were walking. I slowed down a lot because it was very odd. I didn't know if they were going to jump in front of my car or what, since there are well-maintained sidewalks less than 10 feet for them to use. The next thing I notice is the clothing. The person was walking slowly, almost waddling, and was wearing a hooded jacket with the hood up and their hands inside the front pouch, sweatpants, and soaking wet slippers due to the light rain without socks. This person was about 3 car lengths away from the stop sign, and I was close now getting ready to stop and ask if they needed help or something. As soon as I was just about right behind him adjacent, this person who I then saw was an old man with wrinkly and very pale skin, whipped around insanely fast and stared at me. My brights were still on and I could see how pale his skin was, and then I saw the pitchback eyes. No whites in his eyes, just black. I was immediately filled with terror and almost froze up, but I floored it and sped the last few blocks to my apartment, parked, and sprinted inside, locking all my doors and windows. The next day I realized that none of the street lights were illuminated on my whole street when this happened, even though it was within distance to trigger the sensors. I couldn't sleep at all that night. This happened in April 2017. This happened back in the spring of 2018 when I was attending Western Kentucky University. My roommate and I are both old country boys who were living in the city. We are both big outdoorsmen and would rather be in the woods than anywhere else. I grew up in Boy Scouts, so I spent at least one weekend a month from age 13-18 camping in the woods somewhere. It's just where I feel most at home. So living in the city drove me crazy until I found this beautiful park about 45 minutes outside of Bowling Green called Shanty Hollow Lake. It is a large 135-acre lake with many acres of land surrounding it. This area is a major destination for college kids to hike to a beautiful waterfall, but that's the only trail in this massive park. My buddy and I like to get off the trail and see what we could find. We'd make new trails, climb cliffs, and just explore the area. One thing we noticed a lot was saplings, usually about 6-8 inches in diameter, snapped at the base and then twisted around another tree. Sometimes once, sometimes 3 times. I always found this odd, and in recent history, I've read these could be used as boundary markers. These were usually found off the beaten path, nowhere close to where people hiked. The night of the encounter, my buddy and I went out around 2:00 in the morning to go view a meteor shower. We walked down the trail a ways to get away from the light reflecting off the lake to try and get a better view, but it was a full moon, so not great for view showers. As we are sitting there just taking in the silence, we hear slaps on the water and a flock of geese go absolutely nuts and take off flying. It scared the crap out of us because we weren't talking, just kind of sitting there meditating. We think it is a beaver or something and just laugh it off. But then we hear a kerflush. Something massive was thrown into the lake. And I mean massive, because it took about 5 seconds for the water to rain back onto the lake. That is what freaked us out the most. Even though it was very dark, we could see a vast and tall upright form move out of the brush to our right, maybe 150 feet away. There was a grunting sound as well, though it soon faded away. The hair was standing up on the back of my neck, and we both simultaneously said, "Let's get the hell out of here," and we booked it out as fast as we could. I'll add that there was no one else there at all that night, and to my knowledge, nothing in the woods could throw a boulder that size. So I asked this question. Was it a Bigfoot? I would have to say that it was. I ran into Bigfoot on the beach. I'd been a beach bum for a bit, haunting the shores of a coastal town. It wasn't a bad gig. I'd figured out how to live pretty comfortably, and I was making more than I ever had in the string of dead-end jobs I'd been able to keep. Alcoholism is a harsh mistress, but I figured out that if I stayed under the police radar and stayed out of the dope game, people left me alone. I sold glass and macrame jewelry. Sitting on the beach in a wife beater and BDU cargo pants for most of that summer. I made the arrowheads from the bottoms of bottles. The little eccentrics were from broken arrowheads. Gauge the tourist, size them up, and charge whatever I could. Once in a while, a nice tourist girl would pick me up, and I'd spend a night in a hotel. I mostly stayed by myself. I built a little lean-to out of driftwood, and the California sun was warm enough. I didn't really need a sleeping bag or anything. Wake up at 2 a.m., take 3 shots. Wake up at 6 a.m., take 3 shots. Then grab my blanket and wander back to where I was selling stuff. I'd drink sporadically during the day, then I'd retreat back to my little hideaway and get shithammered. I was wandering back to my hideaway one night. My hair was braided up and I had a cigarette in one hand and a bottle of bourbon in the other. The bag thrown casually over my shoulder had a couple of perch and some urchins in it. My money was mostly for booze after all. The thing wandered out of the ocean and looked at me. I looked back. It stood about 7 feet tall. Its eyes were bulbous, and it had a very obvious fishy flair to it. I put the cigarette in my mouth and reached down to the knife on my belt. I'm not much of a boxer or a wrestler, but I could scrap and I don't spook easily. We made baleful eye contact for a bit, and then it turned around and walked back into the waves. I kept walking, unsnapping the sheath on my knife, but otherwise a bit unfazed. Find a fatalistic, homeless alcoholic, and I'll show you someone who really doesn't give a damn. I started the fire back at my little lean-to and cracked the urchin with a couple of spoons. I should have stolen some lemon too, but urchin aren't bad eating anyways. I tossed the shells into the waves while I gutted the perch and cooked them. I proceeded to kill the bottle of bourbon and retrieved the cheap handle of vodka from inside the lean-to. No one really bothered me. I'd had some trouble with a group of tweakers when I first got down here. Got my ass kicked pretty good, but I'd also managed to put two of the group in the hospital before I limped away. I was a hard target. I really had nothing. I wasn't in their game. And I left them alone as long as they didn't bother me. The one who'd gotten the worst of it had lost an eye during the brawl. The cops never questioned me about it. Truth was that no one gave a shit. I'd sometimes turn and find him watching me, and I'd always give him the finger and keep going. He knew better than to screw with my camp. I chucked the bits of perch I didn't eat into the waves, just letting them roll out with the tide. I was pretty sure I saw a scaled hand grab at the spine of one, but I decided I was just drunk. Now, there's something a lot of people don't talk about. The missing women get a lot of attention, but the missing men don't. And trust me, a lot of us disappear out there. Sometimes we just skip town without telling anyone. Sometimes a fight gets lethal and there's no one to look. That doesn't account for all of them, though, and I'd seen a number in my time. I'd heard that there were a lot of them out here, but it never bothered me. It was a tourist town, after all, and a lot of people would just move on. I was less scared than you'd think by the giant fishy thing. You spend enough time on the road and in the woods, and sooner or later, you realize that there are some weird little cracks in the world. Don't act like you're in a horror movie and glimpses are mostly what you get. The quiet places of the earth don't abide by the same rules. The gods of the roads rule the long expanses between towns, and Mother Nature is one hell of a weird bitch. I developed some superstitions. Black dogs mostly. That's another story. Like I said, don't get too close. Don't investigate. Leave the weird to itself, and it leaves you to yourself. That's life out here. A lot of homebums don't get it. But travelers, we see a lot, and there's really no talking about it with normal people since. Let's face it, most of us have some pretty serious issues with addiction and mental illness. I went to sleep on my blanket and woke up at 2 a.m. like usual. Physical addiction to alcohol doesn't abide by what hours you want to sleep. You just deal with it. I took a shaky shot and watched the quiet waves lap up the shore, then took another two back-to-back and lit a cigarette. It wasn't the best life, but it was a good one. You'd be surprised at how many of the downfalls of alcoholism come from other people. The thing emerged again, walking alongside my campsite and looking at the glowing embers of the fire. I tossed a piece of driftwood on, watching it flare up so I could get a better look at it. Curiosity got the better of me. Again, I regretted the decision almost immediately. It was scaled from head to toe, clawed as well. It had big teeth. Its eyes were the worst part, bulbous and fish-like with a hint of cunning. I took the bottle of vodka to my mouth and two long swallows. "You may as well sit down," I said, motioning to a thick trunk I dragged near the fire. "If you're looking to scare me, you did it already." It looked at me and I repeated the gesture. The fish Bigfoot thing sat down across the fire from me. I turned around and grabbed my rucksack, figuring I'd break bread with it. I found the jerky and offered it a piece. It reached out and took it and threw it in its mouth. "Might want to chew that, big boy," I said as it made some sputtering noises. I gestured at my mouth and mimed chewing. It reached into its enormous maw and pulled the chunk of jerky forward and tried its best to chew. The pointed teeth shredded and tore at it for a while. "Guess you don't really have the right equipment for it." I took another long pull on the bottle. It gestured at the bottle and I looked at it through the side of my eye. "Why the hell not? Careful with that," I said, making a gesture for a small amount with my right hand. "Paquito, you know?" I handed the bottle over and Fish Bigfoot took a short amount of it. It looked at me like I'd betrayed it and handed the bottle back. "It ain't for everyone," I told it flatly. "This is a professional drink." I chuckled and it mimicked me until we were both outright laughing. It sounded more like a frog than anything, but it was decent company. I was a couple of miles out of town, and it was pretty rare that anyone came out to my camp other than the sheriff who checked up on me once in a while. I sat there, just kind of having a one-sided conversation with it until the sun came up. As soon as the first rays of the sun started showing it stood up, I waved at it, and it waved back. It walked back into the tide. Things went like that for a few nights. One-sided, drunk conversations with Fish Bigfoot. It seemed to like me. At least enough it brought me a thresher shark, although it seemed a bit offended when I cooked my portion. My days got a bit dark, though. My life, it wasn't bad. I was free to be me, which mostly meant drunk and alone. That's not how it goes for everyone out there. All one I had been stalking me for a while, but was gone all of a sudden. I met a teenage runaway. I tried to convince her to go home, but whatever she was running from was worse than life out here. At the very least, I told her, stay away from the dope. Pretty soon she was running around with the tweakers who kept camp closer to town. She'd come and talk to me during the day, and I watched the pretty little thing lose weight and start acting oddly. I knew this game. I was a drunk. Not a hero. Just a scrappy loner. Albeit I was apparently some kind of Fish Bigfoot whisperer. Playing hero. Well, it goes badly. I'd done it a few times, and right now I just kind of absorbed the sad and watched. I'd been chilling with Fish Bigfoot, whom I was now calling Henry, for 3 weeks. The weird was lessening quite a bit. We'd managed some rudimentary two-way communication. He liked fish, bugged me for jerky, and after some amount of experimentation, it turns out Henry was a big fan of tequila. I had enough spare cash that it wasn't a big deal, but he drank like, well, a 7-foot-tall, 300-pound Fish Bigfoot. He even brought a friend a couple of times. Henry was pretty damn big for his race as far as I could tell. He towered over most of the other ones he brought. So one night when I heard stirring by the fire, I sat up and saw Henry standing there with a serious look on his face. Bared teeth, the fin on his head raised. For a split second, I thought he was going to eat me. He didn't. He motioned for me to follow him. When I got up, he looked at me doubtfully and then pointed at my knife. I took the hint and strapped it onto my belt, stopping long enough to grab my bourbon and smokes as well. I offered him the tequila bottle, but he waved it away. He began moving down the beach and I followed him. We'd made it about a half mile when I heard the screams. I quickened my pace to a solid run, chucking the cigarette to the side. Ahead of me, Henry began moving quickly. He stopped suddenly when we were near the sources and motioned at himself and the trees. I didn't like the scene I came upon. One, I had a knife in his hand, standing above the runaway that had been talking to me. The others stood around, all shirtless and painted with various symbols. I don't play hero, I told myself softly. I took a long swig of the bourbon and pulled the knife. I don't play hero. I charged in without really spending a whole lot more time thinking about it. Not a hero, just doing what needed to be done. The girl had been cut up already. I ran directly into one eye before he could plunge the knife. "You mother F," he said to me as we bowled over. I slashed at him with the big combat knife, laying open his cheek underneath the dead eye. Someone grabbed me from behind, and I felt a knife slice at my left arm. I tore free and spun, slashing at the other one. They circled me, and I stood over the girl, watching the sides and turning in a slow circle. A half dozen of them close. Another four hanging back. For the first time since I'd left the woods all those years ago, I really wished I'd had a gun. The first one leapt towards me and I swept to the side and stuck forward with a knife. He missed me, and a moment afterwards I realized he'd been aiming for the bound girl. The hilt hit his stomach. Cutting people up is a grisly business. A slash here and there is one thing, but sticking it in their guts. You can smell it. There were two dead aggressors in my past. As I pulled the knife free with a twist, I assumed it was now three. I figured I could handle two more before I got cut. Or I could let them have the girl and run. I'm no hero, I told myself. I caught a blow aimed at the girl with my left forearm, feeling the knife dig deep. I snapped in a way I hadn't since I'd been in the woods that weren't woods all those years ago. I tore into them, catching blows aimed at the girl. Blood mixed, I wasn't sure whose was whose within seconds. I knew I was getting fainter and weaker by the second. A blow came for the girl, struck her stomach, and she screamed and twisted against her binds. I fell to my knees, sure I was going to be dead soon. Henry suddenly came running into the circle. It worked when I screamed. I took the opportunity to use the last of my strength, reaching for him with my knife. I struck home, dragging it outward and to the right. Henry tore into the tweakers. Fish Bigfoot was on my side. What I'd been doing was gruesome. His attacks were overkill. He ripped off limbs with ease and bit off heads. For my part, I hammered on one eye with the butt of my knife until he was an unrecognizable mess. Two more of them came out of the waves. They began dragging the bodies back into the sea as I sat there, exhausted. Henry moved toward the girl after all of the bodies were gone, and I tried to stand and get myself in the way. He held me up, then bent down to untie the girl. For my part, I finally collapsed. When I woke up, Henry was gone and the cops were there. I left town 2 days later, richer for my experience with Fish Bigfoot Henry. I'll always say it's not time to be curious when the weird shows up, but I think my life is richer for the time I spent with Henry. I'm in the desert now, but someday I want to go back and see if he'll drink some tequila with me, and we can enjoy the beach like the good old days. It's time for a light supernatural story. Not so much of a hiking, though. It was a survival test for joining a mountaineering club in my campus. There were 20-ish of us, including myself, in the middle of the woods. With our foods were confiscated by the recruitment commit, so that we needed to find natural foods from nature such as fruit, especially banana, edible plants, or even locust or snake if lucky. Miserable test, but valuable experience indeed. One day, it was raining so hard in the afternoon, and all of our five groups hadn't finished set up our group bivouacs. We intentionally set them near each other so we could check everyone instantly something is going wrong. No one was talking or chatting to each other. It was only given by our soaked clothes and empty stomaches, when suddenly all of us heard a hysterical woman scream. And 5 seconds surprised woman scream. Everyone heard it, and the scream was so close and loud. We all thought it was one of us screaming because of snake or something. So naturally, the boys jolted instantly to a bivouac we thought was the source of the scream. No girls were crouching or standing up as we imagined. All of us stared at each other, especially the girls, as we thought one of them was pulling a prank on us to surprise us. No one claimed the scream nor admitted that it was her joke. Everyone looked equally shocked. After minutes of investigating the girls, we then went back to our respective groups with an unanswered incident. Even after the recruitment process was finished and we went back to civilization. After we officially members of the club, we shared that story to our seniors, and it turns out, the place my batch used to set bivouacs was the first time to be used in 5 years. And the last batch used that part of the woods experienced the exact screaming incident, also without any logical explanation, and they chose to base that incident as their batch name, Forest's Cry.